This is Audible.
Audible Originals presents Sidney Crosby, The Rookie Year. With me, Joe Manganiello.
In this room. The lottery will actually take place in a separate secure room.
I just remember being down in the basement and it was kind of a weird situation.
July 22nd, 2005. A cool summer night in Cole Harbor, Nova Scotia.
It's not something you really expect when you're dreaming of, as a kid, one day playing NHL. You think about the draft or you think about hopefully playing your first NHL game, but you don't really think about spectating a draft lottery, which is ultimately going to have a big impact on what team you're going to play for.
Welcome to a unique moment in the history of the National Hockey League. We're thrilled to be here as we take the first step towards the 05-06 season and the future of the NHL.
It's usually quiet here, very quiet, but not tonight. All eyes are on this tiny town in eastern Canada, at the house of the most anticipated prospect the National Hockey League had seen in a generation.
They shut our road down, like our little street. It was bizarro. It was crazy. Our street was lined with TV trucks and, it was crazy. I couldn't tell you how many people were here.
On était campé ici devant la maison des Crosby qui, eux, attendaient à l'intérieur de voir qu'elle sera...
Well, just watching the news and watching the friends here around and knowing my second-door neighbor is a pretty famous guy, I would say that the NHL lockout is over and Sidney's soon to be a superstar for real.
And here we had like a whole crowd of people on the street, satellite trucks. They had people all over the place. We were camped outside of our house. Both grandmothers were here. They thought they were rock stars, you know. They sat upstairs and watched all the TV trucks here and cameras. They took it all in. So it was pretty funny that way. But yeah, we just kind of waited for it to happen, but it was pretty exciting.
It's kind of been a long day, a lot of anticipation, but I'll just be happy when 5 o'clock comes and I'll start naming off the teams. And obviously then I'll have a better idea of, you know, what the future might hold, but I'm not going to look into it too much. I'm just going to enjoy it.
Sidney Crosby was only 17, but scouts had been charting his every move since he was seven. Junior arenas in Canada became standing room only events because of him. He was barely a teenager when people started calling him the next Wayne Gretzky. Yeah, you know, the guy with 4 Stanley Cups and the record for most goals scored in NHL history. Wayne frickin' Gretzky.
I knew then that maybe I had maybe a special scoring touch or something. I realized that I should take this game seriously.
And this was the night that would decide where the phenom would start his professional career.
A few minutes from now, one lucky club will win first overall pick in the 2005 NHL entry draft. And with that, the opportunity to select the most talked about prospect since Eric Lindros, one Sidney Crosby.
Typically, there are a handful of guys in the conversation to go number one, but not this year. The top choice for any team was a foregone conclusion. This was the Sidney Crosby sweepstakes.
And one, here we go, Sidney.
Now, before we get to those picks, let us speak to the man all the fuss is about. Sidney Crosby joins us from his home in Cole Harbour, Nova Scotia. Sidney, this must be somewhat surreal for you. Any other year, a week before the draft, you'd in all likelihood know exactly where you are going. Instead, 30 different options. Are you excited? Are you nervous? Are you numb?
I think all of those. I think it's been a lot of anticipation the last little while, and it's definitely exciting. I mean, I've been looking forward to this for about a week now, ever since I found out it was going to happen. So I'm going to sit here and watch like everyone else.
As 5 o'clock approached, Sidney and his parents huddled around the TV in the basement along with Sid's sister Taylor, his grandparents, and his two agents, Pat Brisson and Dee Rizzo. They were all watching the lottery unfold on Canadian Sports Network TSN, or trying to. TSN had a crew there to capture the moment. Sid and his family tried to act natural, even though there were cameras in their faces. They waited as one by one, NHL officials opened envelopes revealing each franchise's drafting order from last to first.
Every team that fell off, like every team that was announced, we just kind of crossed them off the list.
Sid's dad, Troy Crosby, admits they had their eye on one team in particular, the Montreal Canadiens.
And we started watching the draft picks go 30 or 29, 28, 20, you know, kept going down and down and down. And then it got down to the final five.
With five teams left, Montreal remained on the board, the same Canadiens that Sidney grew up following. That iconic sweater, the big red C on the front, worn by guys like Patrick Waugh, Denis Savard, and Guy Lafleur.
Montreal was still there. They were still in it. And we were like, it's going to happen. It's going to happen, right? Montreal, you know, it's our favorite team growing up. And we think, oh, we're going to Montreal. And then the next thing was Montreal. They picked fifth that year.
The fifth overall selection in the 2005 NHL entry draft goes to the Montreal Canadiens.
The Habs were off the board.
It was disappointing because growing up a Montreal fan, knowing that they were still in the mix there for the lottery, they thought, oh, maybe there's a chance I could end up going there. And my dad was drafted there. And, you know, at home, the following, especially then, was Montreal, Toronto, or Boston. So there was a pretty big Montreal following home, which would have been pretty cool that way. Yeah, after that, after Montreal got picked, it was kind of like that little bit of, oh, and then it was like, okay, what's it going to be?
Soon it was down to the Anaheim Mighty Ducks and Pittsburgh Penguins. Eddie Olczyk was head coach of the Penguins at the time.
I was sitting in my office and had it on television.
We're down to the final two picks. Commissioner Gary Bettman will announce the winner, the first overall pick first.
It was just like time stopped.
The number one overall selection in the 2005 NHL entry draft belongs to Pittsburgh Penguins.
When I had realized that we had won the lottery, and then I was kind of in a, I don't want to say in a daze or a trance. It's just like, oh my God, we just got Sid. Like, we won the lottery. I heard somebody hooting and hollering in another office down the hallway. And I heard another yell and people clapping. And I kind of just came out of it. I'm just like, this is, I'm not dreaming. Like, this is real. Like, this really just did happen.
Down the hall at Penguins headquarters was head of communications, Tom McMillan.
It was almost as though the room started spinning because everything just changed for us on this moment. It was an oh my God moment.
McMillan picked up the phone to call Mario Lemieux, legendary former player and owner of the Pittsburgh Penguins.
We were trying to call Mario and we couldn't get him because he was with his daughter at a doctor's appointment during the draft lottery because he just didn't think it was going to happen.
Here's Mario.
The odds were pretty low, so I figured chances are we're not going to get top pick, but we did and changed the franchise.
Mario wasn't the only one caught off guard. Mark Recchi, who was on the Pens roster that year, recalls getting the news.
I was at the golf course at a charity event, and we got that pick, and I know how excited everybody was. I mean, they were, you know, already saying, you know, this is the next Mario Lemieux for Pittsburgh, and, you know, it was just so exciting.
Defenseman Ryan Whitney was on a family vacation at the beach.
My brother came like sprinting down to the beach from the house. He's like, Penguins won the lottery. Like, you're getting Crosby. You're going to play with Crosby. I was like, oh my God.
You know, we hit the lottery 10 times over, and this is going to galvanize the organization. It's going to galvanize the city.
Here's Pittsburgh radio host Mark Madden.
I was doing my radio show live when we found out on air that the Penguins won the lottery, and I broke down and cried on the air. Because I've been a lifelong Penguin fan. I've been going to games since the first year of the franchise, literally since I was 6 years old. And I knew what that would mean to the team. I knew it would mean another glory era because we already had a bunch of components in place. And then you bring, you know, the next big thing in hockey. And all that, of course, is predicated based on whether you believe he's the next big thing in hockey. But I was very confident he would turn out as advertised, and certainly as it turned out, like Pittsburgh needed him to be.
When these guys come in, you never imagine they're going to be as good as their hype. If he could be anywhere close to the hype, we were going to be in really good shape.
Back in Cole Harbor, in the Crosby's basement, Sid hugged his family. His future was set.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of pressure that comes with that. Part of it was, you know, the pressure I put on myself, and part of it was kind of the pressure of the expectations that kind of came with that.
I guess we should all be congratulating the Pittsburgh Penguins, real winners on the day. What was your reaction at home watching all of this unfold?
Very happy. It was nerve-wracking the whole time, you know, just kind of counting down the teams, but it was exciting at the same time and happy with the way it ended and just looking forward to the draft.
Sidney Crosby is one of the greatest NHL players of all time. From a Canadian phenom dubbed the next Gretzky to an 18-year-old carrying the burden of a crumbling franchise, Crosby faced one of the most scrutinized and tumultuous rookie seasons in the history of professional hockey. I'm actor Joe Manganiello. You might have seen me in True Blood or the Magic Mike films, but you also might have seen me screaming my head off behind the glass at a Penguins game. I was born and raised in Pittsburgh, and I'm a ride-or-die Pens fan. Like so many others around the city, I've been with the team through it all. The heyday in the early 90s, the struggling seasons and financial troubles, and I remember when we drafted Sid the Kid, giving us hope our franchise could be saved. So can you imagine what it felt like for him? Sidney Crosby is a quiet, private guy, but he agreed to dive deep for this Audible original and reflect back on that roller coaster year. Alongside his family, coaches, and former teammates, Crosby talks candidly about the intense pressure he was under, the surreal experience of lacing up alongside his childhood idol Mario Lemieux, the truth about his rivalry with Alex Ovechkin, and yeah, even what it was like to face a deafening chorus of Crosby sucks chants in Philly. For Pens fans, Sid isn't just the guy. He's our guy. The kind of person you'd drop the gloves for. But man, he sure had to earn that loyalty.
Paying your dues? Earning your stripes? That's what I think about being a rookie.
This is Sidney Crosby as you've never heard him before. This is Sidney Crosby, the rookie year. Before we continue, a quick note to say that this Audible original contains strong language and scenes of violence. Listener discretion is advised. Chapter 1, Winning the Lottery. I'll be honest, NHL draft lotteries don't usually generate much excitement, but it had hardly been a typical year for the league. The NHL was in turmoil. For months prior to the so-called Sidney Crosby sweepstakes, the players and owners had been embroiled in a nasty labor dispute. The issue was money, of course. League owners wanted a salary cap while the Players Association argued for revenue sharing. When the two sides couldn't reach an agreement, the NHL canceled its 2004-2005 season, the entire 1,230-game schedule. On February 16, 2005, Commissioner Gary Bettman made it official.
It is my somber duty to report that at today's meeting, the NHL Board of Governors unanimously reconfirmed that NHL teams will not play at the expiration of the CBA until we have a new system which fixes the economic problems facing our game.
It marked the first time since the Spanish flu pandemic of 1919 that the Stanley Cup wouldn't be awarded. As a diehard hockey fan, the lockout was brutal. It also created a ton of uncertainty for teams and players, including Sid.
When the lockout happened or when they called it off, I think prior to that I was pretty optimistic, at least if they would get in a half a year. But knowing that there wasn't going to be any hockey that year, I knew that there'd be a lot more focus on junior hockey and, you know, a lot more eyes on the draft and the guys that were coming in. So it was just kind of a wild time because your mind goes in so many different places. You're thinking, okay, where would I potentially play if there was no NHL season the following year? Not because I was thinking ahead, but I just wanted to be ready for anything. So I think it made things a little bit different and, you know, just kind of wing it at that point.
Crosby was a 17-year-old playing junior hockey in Quebec for the Rimouski Oceanic. He didn't know if he was ready for the NHL, much less if the league was even going to hold a draft.
I think at that point, I was going into my second year, so I don't think I was thinking, oh, I'm going to be ready to play in the NHL at 18 for sure. But I think that I also wanted to be able to make that next step if I was ready. And not knowing if there was going to be an NHL season, I think the thought of playing in Europe, or I think at the time they were talking about maybe starting the WHA again, a new league there possibly, if things continued. So, you know, you'd have casual conversations, but I think everybody was pretty optimistic the NHL was going to start up again. So I just tried to focus on, you know, having a really good year and worrying about the things that I could control there.
Meanwhile, in my hometown of Pittsburgh, our beloved Penguins were facing an equally uncertain future. The truth is, the team at the time was kind of a mess. Radio host Mark Madden again.
The team went bankrupt, and Mario Lemieux bought it out of bankruptcy. There was some speculation it would move to Kansas City or just fold altogether.
The Penguins' financial woes actually date back to the 70s, when ownership started getting into hot water with a bunch of creditors. They first filed for bankruptcy back in 1975, and it didn't help that attendance was suffering. By 1983, they were averaging fewer than 7,000 fans a game. Then along came Mario Lemieux, a Canadian young gun with tons of hype around him. The Penguins drafted him with the number one pick in 1984, and he promptly went to work turning Pittsburgh into a perennial contender.
Premier choix de Pittsburgh, number 66, Mario Lemieux.
And he did it in spectacular fashion, leading the team to back-to-back Stanley Cup championships in 1991 and 1992.
Here's Lemieux. The center penalty coming up. Look at Lemieux. Oh, my heavens. What a goal. What a move. Lemieux. Oh, baby.
I grew up watching those championship seasons on TV with my brother and my friends, and with the family I used to babysit for in the neighborhood. It felt like that was when Pittsburgh really turned into a true hockey town.
Lemieux's in on goal and shot. Hey! Shoots and scores! Mario Lemieux beats Casey like a rented mule again! And the Penguins lead 3-1. Oh, you'd have to be here to believe it!
But somehow, by 1999, the Penguins were in financial hot water again. A huge jump in player salaries was one of the problems. And that included the paycheck for Lemieux. Total back pay to the tune of around $30 million. So what did Mario do? He agreed to exchange his outstanding salary for a stake in the team. Anything to save his beloved Pens. Alongside investor Ron Burkle, the two became co-owners of the organization, essentially buying it out of bankruptcy. It was just another reason why Lemieux was a hero to us in the Berg. He famously beat cancer in the early 90s before having to retire at the end of the 96-97 season when his Hodgkin's lymphoma returned. But you can't keep Super Mario down. In 2000, after a 44-month absence from the NHL, he made an emotional return to the team, this time as a player and an owner. Despite his remarkable comeback, Mario was still struggling to get the franchise out of the red. And the league-wide lockout in 2004? Yeah, that didn't help.
I was there from 03 until late 05.
Head coach Eddie Olczyk.
The rumors were legit. Like, this wasn't just some negotiating ploy by ownership or anything. Like, there was, there's always that. I mean, politics are always going to be a part of it, but it was legit.
And let me tell you, around Pittsburgh, the possibility of the Penguins leaving the city and us losing our NHL franchise, it was unthinkable. We were panicked. Here's Mario.
Well, it was pretty low. I mean, we couldn't keep our stars. We had to trade a couple guys for money at the time just to try to survive. And we traded Jágr, which was unfortunate. But we had to do it to save the franchise and stay afloat.
But Mario knew money alone wouldn't be enough to secure the Penguins' future. The team needed a literal game changer. someone to get the fans excited and to get them into seats. And that's when we started getting lucky. On July 13th, 2005, the NHL owners and players finally came to terms on a new collective bargaining agreement, effectively ending the lockout. In a rush to get a season on the books, things happened fast.
Good afternoon and welcome to the 2005 National Hockey League Entry Draft.
Within days of the lockout ending, we got a gift from the hockey gods. Pittsburgh landed the top pick in the NHL Draft Lottery. That's when we knew we were going to get Sidney Crosby. Even though I was living out in LA at the time, I remember how ecstatic fans were, myself included. There was just this feeling, this hope, that this was the guy who was going to deliver us back to the glory days of the early 90s.
Then I remember watching drafts and talking to my dad about it and saying, oh, that must be so nerve-wracking. They don't know where they're going to go. And he goes, you know how to take the nerves out of it. Just make sure you go one and know where you're going. So I always kind of like laugh when I think about that, because he did tell me that and he's right. But at the same time, you still have nerves on your draft day, regardless of if you're going one or not, but it's still something you work really hard for. So it's nice to have that. But it comes with expectations, there's no doubt. There's a lot that comes with it.
I congratulate the young men for whom this is such a special and important day. I send congratulations to their families as well.
By the time the NHL draft arrived on July 30th, it was honestly pretty anticlimactic. For starters, there was zero doubt Sidney Crosby was going number one to the Penguins. And two, in the rush to start the season, the draft was thrown together in the matter of a week.
It feels good to finally be able to say the first selection in the 2005 NHL entry draft belongs to the Pittsburgh Penguins.
It was probably the most scaled down version you could get.
Sidney Crosby remembers the scene crammed into a conference room at a Westin in Ottawa.
We're all in a room in a boardroom at the hotel, and the draft room was pretty good size, but it was downsized to make it look like on TV like it typically would on an arena floor. So I think every team had only so many people that they were allowed at each table, and then the players were being drafted. I think they only invited maybe guys ranked, I don't know if it was top 20 or even first round maybe, but that's basically what the room was. Pretty tight, bunch of little tables. You're just sitting at a little table with your family, and then you go to the next room, and that's where the actual draft is. So just remember being so excited to have that day.
It's a thrill for the Pittsburgh Penguins to be standing here in this position today. It's a very, very, very lucky day for our organization, our city, and our fans worldwide. On behalf of Mario Lemieux and the entire ownership group, Pittsburgh Penguins select from Rimouski in the Quebec Major Junior League, Sidney Crosby.
I was just trying to soak it all in. I mean, you work so hard to get to that point, and nothing's guaranteed even when you get drafted. But I just tried to really enjoy and soak up the day of the draft and, you know, everything that came with it.
When your kids do something, you're proud of them, and you get pretty emotional.
This is Sid's dad, Troy Crosby.
Right? I mean, it's like anything. I mean, plus I'm a crier too, right? So, I mean, you know, so I'm an emotional guy, so when my kids do something, I'm really proud, and just you just enjoy it, and you're just really proud for them.
Sidney, I know throughout your life you've probably envisioned this moment about 10,000 times. Now that it's finally here and you have the jersey on, did it live up to those expectations?
This is amazing, and I'm just really relieved. It's unbelievable. I'm so happy right now, and it's a lot of hard work, a lot of sacrifices, not from myself, but my family as well.
With that jersey comes a heavy burden of expectations. Here you are still 17 years old, and they're hailing you as the savior of the franchise. How do you deal with those expectations?
I'm not really thinking about it right now. I want to come and play in the NHL next year. That's my goal. That's my focus right now. So I'm going to put everything into that and try to move on from there.
As owner, Mario Lemieux knew what Sid would mean to the team and its bottom line. We asked him about Crosby's influence.
really to get Sid was amazing for the franchise. I mean, season tickets were sold out and people couldn't wait to see him on the ice.
I don't know that anybody's ever come in with the hype that Sid came in with. And it was, remember, going back to the context of the NHL was coming out of a lockout. So it's not, there are lots of hyped players, but there's probably never been more focus on the league than that year because it had been shut down for an entire year. And for our franchise, people tend to forget how low we were. I don't know that anybody could have been lower than we were at that point. We had finished last for three straight years. We were last in attendance in 2003-04. The league shut down for a year, and it looked like there was no hope for a new arena. It looked like the team might even move. And so how do we ever get out of this? And then the ping pong ball went the right way, and everything changed.
And just to double down on his chance to save the franchise, maybe this time for the long haul, Mario decided to lace up his skates again.
Well, I came back in 2000 out of retirement. I felt at the time that we had a pretty good team, but I still played until 2005 in the middle of the year.
Penguins head coach Eddie Olczyk.
I mean, think about it. The face of the franchise, all of a sudden, with all the changes and the unknowns, and we win the lottery, and here comes Sid. Mario was going to do everything in his possibility, health-wise and hockey-wise, is to get that opportunity to, you know, to play with Sid.
Any top draft pick in any sport knows how much pressure there is to deliver for your new team. But for Sidney Crosby, he was walking into a franchise that literally needed wins to survive. The expectation for Sid in Pittsburgh?
Well, to be the next Mario.
That's sports personality Mark Madden again.
Because he came in, you know, somewhat similar circumstances to when Mario did. The team's rock bottom, a much ballyhooed 18-year-old comes in, and the expectation was that Sid would make the team win.
Looking back on it, Lemieux is definitive about the impact of drafting Sid.
If Sidney would have been picked by Anaheim, I mean, the franchise would have been in trouble for a long time here in Pittsburgh, so he changed the franchise.
As for Sid, he just tried to focus on his game. After all, the teenager technically still had to make the team.
I was like, I got to go earn a spot on this team. I can't be just okay. You know, like, I got to go there and be ready and show that I'm ready. I don't want to leave any doubt in their mind that I'm not ready to play at 18. That was my mindset.
The entire Penguins fan base and the entire Penguins front office was relying on Sidney Crosby. But as the kid began packing his bags and preparing for training camp, he knew he had a smaller but much more important group of Penguins to win over, his teammates.
I haven't played a game in the league. You know, I'm sitting next to Mario. I got John LeClair, Mark Recchi, Lyle O'Line. You know, I've got a lot of older players who have done a lot of great things over their career, and I hadn't played one game, and I'm getting all this attention. And obviously, hockey's team sport, and like, you know, I think my mindset even prior to getting the NHL is like, I always just wanted to be one of the guys. I didn't want to like draw any more attention that way.
Here's Sportsnet hockey analyst Colby Armstrong, who played 8 seasons in the league.
You know, at the next level, you always wonder, yeah, okay, kid, we'll see when you get to the NHL how good you are, you know, ha ha ha.
Matt Murley was a left winger drafted by the Pens in 1999. He went on to a 14-season professional career.
He was breaking these records and doing all this stuff, but you've heard of 100 of kids like that your whole life. Like, oh, he's going to be the next one. And then each year, a guy drops off. Let's see what he does in the pros. We heard about him, but you're like, I don't know if he'll ever really live up to that.
Pens goaltender Marc-Andre Fleury, who went first overall to Pittsburgh in 2003, played 4 seasons in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. He had been hearing the buzz coming from back home in Canada.
Obviously, I kept track of the news up there and what was happening in the junior league. And every time you saw his name in the news, it was always having 3 or 4 goals a night. You know, it was insane and getting some records and stuff. And everybody was just really enjoying watching him play.
By mid-September, just 6.5 weeks after the NHL lockout was resolved and the draft thrown together, Sidney Crosby was in Pittsburgh getting ready to start training camp with the Penguins. He had just celebrated his 18th birthday.
I liked it. I mean, I didn't have a lot of time to think about it. I liked the fact that
I could just jump right into it. There was no rookie camp that year, I remember, and I remember thinking it would have been nice to have a little bit to transition from a rookie camp into a main camp. But then once I got into the main camp, it was actually, you know, it was actually one of those things where I'm like, I'm glad I just got thrown into it. Didn't have a lot of time to think and just tried to adjust and get better, you know, as fast as I could through the preseason.
Sid was finally getting to do what he'd always dreamed of, playing in the NHL. But he was also walking into a franchise on the brink of collapse. The entire town of Pittsburgh was looking to him, an 18-year-old, to save the team. And the Penguins players, well, some of them weren't convinced the hype was real.
I felt that there was some envy and there was some jealousy inside the room from some veteran players. And that was my role as a coach, to protect Sid.
That's Eddie Olczyk, who was coaching the team at the time.
I'm all for young players coming in and being seen and not heard, knowing where to walk. And I think that's kind of always been the lay of the land. And Sid was very respectful, always respectful. He was getting the attention because of the buildup and who he was and the expectations of him saving the franchise. And I think that there was some veteran guys inside that room that made life a little bit rougher on him. And I think once I felt that it became over the line, or I felt like it was affecting Sid, that's where you had to grab somebody and just say, okay, enough's enough.
Sidney still recalls that first day walking into practice in Pittsburgh.
It's hard as a rookie coming in with that kind of spotlight. And, you know, hockey is such a team sport. You know, the last thing you want to be, especially as a young guy, is someone that has all that attention that comes with them. And, you know, whether it's a camera falling around or being mic'd up or, you know, stuff like that. I was playing with guys, Mario, Mark Recchi, John LeClair. I'm playing with all these guys that have done so much, accomplished so much in their career, played as long as they have. And, you know, here's this kid coming, hasn't played a game, and you know, he's got all this attention and all this fanfare. So I think it was, I wouldn't say it was easy, just because it didn't, you know, that's not something that I would typically like. But I understood that, you know, that's just kind of the way it's going. It comes with it. And I just tried to focus on playing and doing what I needed to do on the ice. But I guess it wasn't ideal. There's a lot of things to balance there. And I try to do my best doing that. But it's, you know, it would be definitely a little bit of a different situation, especially, you know, for the other guys around me.
But there was one surefire way for Sid to shut down the skepticism: with his skills. Colby Armstrong remembers the first time he saw Sid on the ice.
I was just standing there before we went on next, and I was watching just their skate. And that's like the first time in real life that I saw him, you know, and I was like, looking at him, like, he's not super big, really fast, like amazing edges, like so strong on his skates, like battle level through the roof, going against, like, you know, NHL veteran massive guys in practice or just really big competitive guys. So I was like just watching him going, oh my goodness, like look what he's doing to NHL veteran players in practice. Look at the plays he's making. Look at his compete. I was just like, and it was like right in the corner in front of me. There he was. So I remember seeing it going, holy smokes, this kid's no joke. Like, this is real. Is he really only 18? How does he know all this? How is he doing all this? So, yeah, I was, you know, first time I saw him with my own eyes, it was in a practice, and I was amazed.
And Matt Murley's doubts? Yeah, they went away pretty quickly, too.
I'll never forget, like, the first day of training camp, and, you know, I'm down in the mutt locker room, the visiting locker room with all us bums that aren't supposed to make the team, and, you know. So we didn't really see him. I haven't met him. And he was in the first session of the day, so we're all standing there on the glass, and you're doing, like, the Indy 500, just laps, going around, getting warmed up. I'm like, oh, I'm like, he looks kind of small. Like, this guy's going to save the franchise and, like, win all these Stanley Cups and be the next Gretzky? I'm like, I don't know. Like, he looks a little small because you're just floating around together. And that was the day we did a scrimmage. You do the scrimmages first day of camp. And then as soon as the scrimmage started, it was like, oh, my God, this guy's ridiculous. Like, he was flying around. We're like, oh, my God, this guy's the real deal. You knew As soon as the puck dropped that first day, you knew he was going to be something special.
Hockey Hall of Famer Mark Recchi was on the team that season. He had been drafted by the Penguins in 1988 and was a legend in his own right.
Right away, you saw it. You saw his drive, you saw his passion. It was pretty awesome to be able to be part of his first camp and his first year.
Ryan Whitney, NHL analyst and host of the hockey podcast Spittin' Chicklets, was also on the roster. He was newer to the league at the time, having gone fifth overall to Pittsburgh in 2002, but he immediately recognized the bar Sid was setting.
He's making kind of a different noise when he's ripping through the ice, and the ability to kind of hold on to the puck while moving that fast and dodging guys was just, I really had never seen anything like it, and a lot of guys hadn't, because it wasn't just all the skill. It was like he was like getting his nose in the dirty areas, and he's a real prick to play against, and he'd get angry, and he was so competitive that it wasn't just like this skillful guy on the outside. It was like all this skill combined with just a honey badger, like being an animal on the ice in terms of like winning battles, little things like that.
For Marc-Andre Fleury, it was Sid's physical gifts that stood out.
One thing that I remember when I saw the size of his legs, he was just this young kid, right? And walks a little bit bow-legged, but with huge, you know, huge quags and hammies and butt, you know. I was pretty amazed. And then, you know, obviously when you see him on the ice and then he just flies around, right? So for an 18-year-old, yeah, he was pretty impressive.
PR director Tom McMillan recalls how eager everybody around the organization was to get a look at the kid.
I go back to the first day of his first training camp, and we were all fascinated to see him, so much hype. And the two people who were most excited by his first day were two of our former players, Phil Bork and Bob Airey, who played on the 91 and 92 Cup teams and now are our broadcasters, are still with us. They were ecstatic because as former players, they could see Sid doing things that none of the rest of us even would have understood. They're saying, for this kid to do this at 18 in his first day of NHL training camp, like they were saying, I didn't do that at the end of my career, and I played 8 or 12 years.
For Mark Madden, he was reminded of another Pittsburgh legend.
I saw Mario Lemieux's first practice as a Penguin, and you could tell he was just going to burn the league down. With Sid in his first practice, you could tell he was never going to make a mistake. He is so systematically solid, so profoundly excellent in terms of playing the game the right way. And that's a thing you could see right away, even when he was 18 years old.
By the time preseason arrived in mid-September, I think I speak for all Penguins fans when I say we couldn't wait to get a glimpse of our new number one draft pick. Heck, the entire league was chomping at the bit. After a season-long lockout, hockey fans were starving for some action. Add to that a young kid from small-town Canada going first in the draft to a crumbling franchise, about to lace up alongside his childhood idol Mario Lemieux. All eyeballs were on Sid the Kid.
I think, like, looking back, I probably was a little worried just because there was so much attention on me and I'm 18 years old.
Now, he just had to play.
It becomes much more real when you get to the NHL. I mean, the stakes are much higher. There's a lot more on the line.
The moment is finally here. The NHL returns tonight with its newest star, Sidney Crosby.
Yeah. No pressure, right?
I had this, I think this overwhelming feeling of just wanting to like prove that I could play in the NHL. Like it was a dream and it seemed so far away, and then it became closer and closer, and then it was like, okay, I'm here. Now I got to do something with it.
Chapter 2, The Origins of Sid the Kid.
The moment is finally here. The NHL returns tonight with its newest star, Sidney Crosby.
A lot of nerves. Yeah, I remember being nervous, but this combination of being nervous but excited. Like, I just wanted to play after the morning skate. Like, let's drop the puck, let's go.
Teamwork captain and mentor Mario Lemieux The New Look fans are finally ready to take the ice.
A Pittsburgh Penguins game hadn't felt this big in a while. I mean, it had been 13 years since Mario Jagr, Francis, and the fellas raised the Stanley Cup. And for diehard Pens fans like me, that 92 championship may have been the last time we'd gotten this pumped up about a game.
It's been a long time, a year and a half, but the Pens are back.
It was October 5th, the Penguins' first game of the 2005 NHL season, and because of the lockout, their first game since the spring of 2004. It was an away game, facing off against the Devils at the Continental Airlines Arena in East Rutherford, New Jersey. But this wasn't just any opener. The big event, Sidney Crosby, was set to make his long-awaited and much-hyped NHL debut.
The 18-year-old superstar from Cole Harbour, Nova Scotia, brings an incredible passion to this game of hockey. He's got incredible work ethic. This guy's got the skills and the mind to go with those skills. The one thing he is lacking, experience. And he'll get that experience from who else but number 66, Mary Lemieux, back again at the age of 40 and looking healthy as ever to lead this kid both on and off the ice through the trials and tribulations in the National Hockey League.
It was incredible. Just the excitement in the building. There was so much going on. And you know, everybody, obviously, we'd had exhibition games already. But to get that first game, that first regular season game, was unreal.
That's Pens vet Mark Recchi, who was playing on the line with Sid that night. He'd also been a part of the 91 championship team.
You knew something great was going to happen with the franchise, with him being the forefront now and going to lead the way. And it was pretty cool times, that's for sure.
As Penguins radio host Mike Lang recalls, it wasn't just us Pens fans who were rooting for Sidney.
It was interesting because I think the Devil fans and people in hockey all gravitated to that moment because they got something to look forward to. And we kind of felt that without question. And it kind of sparked a kind of a resurgence in the National Hockey League.
For the Pens VP of Communications, Tom McMillan, it felt like a big-time playoff game.
That night, we had to have a press conference for him in the visiting arena for a visiting player, a rookie, had a press conference. There was so much media there. The media stage was going to be completely different for this kid, and it's been that way his entire career.
And Crosby? Yeah, the kid wasn't immune to some butterflies.
I knew there was a lot of eyes on the game, and I knew that there was expectations, so I wanted to make sure that I delivered and made sure that I played well. And typically, game to game in the season, you just get used to preparing for that team and you move on to the next one. But that first game, it seemed so big.
And hockey is back, and here we go.
There he is,
Sidney Crosby. Right here in front is Crosby with a backhander, and he almost got his first NHL goal. His first shift.
Sidney Crosby's NHL dreams started at a young age.
My first memory of hockey would be going to the Halifax Forum. My dad used to take me there to skate, and I must have been probably, I don't know, maybe three or four. I just remember at the end of these skates, they would dump a bunch of sticks and pucks and balls out. So, of course, I was happy to be there skating, but I remember that last 10 minutes of them just unloading all these sticks and balls and pucks on the ice and just being so pumped and just wanting to wait for that moment.
The legend, the myth-making of Sid the Kid began almost as early as his mother Trina Crosby can remember.
I remember this girl that I used to work with. She had a nephew that was around Sidney's age. He was probably three or four at the time. And her nephew lived in Cole Harbour. And she said, you know, we should get the kids together to play. Her little nephew loved to play hockey too. And I said, sure. And so she'd come over one day and they were playing mini, like little hockey and all that. And she was saying, I didn't realize that he could like really play. You know, he played like at daycare. He wanted to. When they had gym in the daytime, he would ask, you know, Violet and Berlene were the teachers. And Berlene would say he would make her play nets all the time. He wanted to play hockey during the gym sessions.
He just knew how to hold a hockey stick.
This is Sid's father, Troy Crosby.
He was never on his ankles when he skated. You know, some kids, you know, they start off on his ankle. He was never on his ankles. I mean, I'm not trying to brag or anything, but he was just really solid on his skates. Always had his stick held the right way. He could lift pucks off the ice when he was like, you know, 3 or 4. And he just kind of picked it up pretty easy.
Of course, Troy Crosby knew hockey talent when he saw it. He'd had a successful career playing in the Quebec Junior Hockey League. In 1984, the same year the Penguins selected Mario Lemieux number 1 overall, Troy was drafted 240th by the Montreal Canadiens, though he never ended up playing in the NHL. Sid was born 3 years later.
He was 6 or 7. He was playing with kids that were 9 or 10, and he was pretty good against those kids. So you knew he had some ability at that point.
In many ways, hockey was just a way of life for the Crosbys. Here's Sid.
From a very young age, I mean, I have so many stories about hockey and how it relates to my family. You know, I look at my dad. He's the one who probably is responsible for me falling in love with the game. He played himself. My sister played. She started skating probably around 4 or 5, ended up starting hockey when she was 8 or 9, and ended up playing college hockey. My mom has a pretty big family. She's got a family of 9, and my 2 uncles both played hockey, and a lot of them were really big role models for me. I looked up to my cousins. I had one that played in Shreveport, Louisiana, professional league there, and he would send me blades back home, and I remember listening to his games on the radio and being so proud of what he accomplished and thankful for the fact that he took care of me, sending me blades and stuff like that home. And I had other cousins that I used their hand-me-down equipment. So hockey was a big part of our family. It was really just a way for us to all connect. It made for a lot of great discussions, a lot of heated debates when we got together. You know, it was just truly kind of ingrained in our family. So as much as I love hockey, I loved what it did and how it brought everyone together. That's kind of how I always looked at it. And of course, I had dreams of wanting to play in the NHL, but I just loved, you know, what it was about.
It was a big dream for a kid growing up in Cole Harbour. It's a small town on the far eastern shores of Nova Scotia. But Sydney always knew how to get a game going.
It was a lot of fun back then. He was little and they were playing, you know, he could barely reach the phone and he'd be on his tiptoes trying to dial the number of some kid up the street who was 6 years older than he was, and he'd get their phone numbers and remember them, and then he couldn't even reach. I'd have to dial the phone. That's when we had the phones on the wall. He couldn't reach, so he'd be telling me the number, and then he'd be calling some kid and organizing a game of ground hockey up the street. We lived on a court then, and Sydney would have been 6 maybe, and then some of those kids were probably 10 or 12 years old.
When Sid wasn't in the street playing hockey, there was always one other place you could be sure to find him. The Crosby family basement.
We were looking for a new house, and we looked at this house here. Actually, it's the same house I'm in right now. So we go with the agent, and we look at the basement, and the basement had one side of it was unfinished. It had just like a gray plywood floor painted, and it was wide open.
I remember looking at it and telling my parents, like, we have to get this house. It's got an unfinished little side in the house. It was tiny, but at the time it felt like an Olympic-sized rink.
That sold me on the house right there. I was already picturing just playing hockey down there. So bought the house after that.
Anyone who came to the house, who entered through the door, had to play hockey. Like, that was pretty much, it was like, come down to the basement.
His little friends would be down there, and they would play for a long time, like hours. When he would go down there and he'd be practicing, he would miss the net and it would hit the dryer. Well, actually, one time I went down and there was a puck, so there was the window and the window frame, like the trim, and then right beside it, there was a puck in the wall. So, like, he missed the window by inches, and then Troy had to go and get, like, this netting, and so the netting was behind the net from ceiling to floor. But still, like, we had that one little opening so I could get by to do the laundry. And it was still, like, when he missed, I found myself yelling, for God's sake, hit the net, you know, just because when he didn't hit the net, it would hit the dryer and it would make that noise.
Sid's parents became experts in the art of identifying the sound of a puck hitting various household surfaces.
If he hit the dryer, it's more like a hollow tin noise hitting the door, you know, to make a dryer door, like a tin noise. And the goalpost, everyone knows the goalpost sounds like an iron. And then there was the support beam was made of iron as well, but that had, it was steel, but it made a different noise than the goalpost. So you knew if it hit that, it kind of echoed. Hitting a wooden door, you hear like a thud or, you know, like a bang, or they're all at different noises. So you knew what they were, but it was all good.
But it was the Crosby family dryer that suffered the most abuse.
I was doing the laundry. I went to turn the dryer on and push the button, and the button was gone. You know, I had to push, like the mechanism could still be pushed, but you had to like kind of put your finger in that hole to push the button.
It worked for a long time with no buttons and stuff on it. We still, it was all dented in the front with puck marks, like a Dalmatian dog, really. All these black marks all over. But the handles busted off, it was all dented in. The buttons on the top where you, for the cycle and the power, was all busted off. But it still worked fine until, I don't know, maybe a couple of years after playing for Pittsburgh. Then we had to get rid of it because it almost caused a fire because it was overheating. We had to call the fire department in because the wall got really hot and we smelled something burning. So it actually was burning, it was getting really hot in the wall. So it was kind of lucky. So after that, we had to buy a new one. And now it's actually in the Hall of Fame with Halifax here. It has its own little area over there, and people go see it in the summers, like for tourism and stuff like that. It's on display over there, so it's kind of cool.
When Sid wasn't battling against the family dryer or neighborhood kids on the street, he was facing off against his fiercest competitor, his dad.
Some of the biggest competition I had to this day was probably playing against him. He would not let me score ever. There's no way he's going to let me get one by. Any one I got on him, I earned, I can tell you that.
He had to earn it. Yeah, we had some good battles. We had some good battles. A little slashing here and there, a few butt ends. It was fun.
But all that practicing was starting to pay off for Sidney.
I remember my grandmother, when I was a kid, she told me she'd give me a dollar for every goal that I scored that year.
That was Troy's mother. That was Nanny Crosby.
She had no idea. She thought, oh, maybe he's going to get like 20 goals this year. It'd be a nice little gift for him at the end of the year.
He ended up having a pretty good year that year.
I think I had 159 goals, and I felt so bad for her. Sure enough, I don't know how she even came up with it, but I ended up getting $159, I think, from her.
I can remember the yell that she let out when he said she owed him $159. That was a true story, and it was really funny.
You know, she was still so proud, but the fact that she was proud kind of made me think that I had accomplished something.
It was a one-time thing. It never happened again.
When I scored 159 goals, I knew then that maybe I had maybe a special scoring touch or something.
Nana Crosby wasn't the only one learning to take Sidney's hockey chops seriously. Sidney's peewee coach, Paul Mason, actually remembers first hearing about him when he was just 5 years old.
I was the coach of the peewee team here. I've been coaching it for a long time. And someone said to me, you know, Paul, you got to go see this kid down in Timbits. And I went and I watched him. And then they told me, you know, he's only five. And it was like eight-year-olds. And I was saying, oh, my God, you got to be kidding me.
Quick lingo check. In case you aren't an expert in Canadian youth hockey, it varies a little. But basically, Timbits and novice teams are for 5 to 8 year olds, give or take. Then you move up to peewee around 11 or 12, bantam at 13 or 14, and then on to the under 18 league for 15 to 17 year olds. Anyway, it was around the peewee level that Sid remembers becoming aware of the attention.
I started to recognize it. I was probably in my own little world there, but yeah, I think once I got to Pee Wee Bantam, it started to become a little bit more clear that that was the case. So that got me excited. For sure, there were times where I felt a little bit more pressure.
Here's Sid's youth coach, Paul Mason, again.
I'll never forget, we're downstairs after a game. One of the assistant coaches is here with me, and My phone rang, and a guy from the Czech Republic contacted me asking about Sidney. Everyone knew who Sid was. We'd have some of the biggest crowds I ever coached because we had Sidney, you know, on our team.
I was definitely confident and assertive when it came to knowing what I was capable of, but that's not even the right wording. I wouldn't even say knowing what I was capable of. I would say I believed in myself. I just really had this belief, and I had a really good work ethic. Man, I just always tried to do my best, and I didn't really know what that meant. I grew up in a fairly small town, so I think I was always pretty realistic about the fact that, yeah, I'm doing pretty good, but I'm also in a small town, too.
Sid tried to maintain perspective, but he was also learning that the buzz came with its own pressures.
Playing with your buddies, you're playing in sold-out rinks, but then there's nights that didn't go well. And you're like, geez, they came to watch me, and I wasn't good. What are they going home thinking, you know, if they came and paid to watch me, what do they really think about me? Like, that wasn't a very good game. So there's some pressure that comes with that.
By age 13, Sidney was ready for stiffer competition. He looked to move up from Bantam to the under-18 league, but was denied because of his age. The following year, however, he was given a pass to join early. It didn't take him long to prove he could make an impact on the ice with older players.
We went to the national championship, lost in the finals, and it was just an unbelievable year. There was no way to top that.
Word of the young phenom from Cole Harbour was spreading. It was around that time that the hype reached high-profile hockey agent Patrice Brisson.
I'd heard from a colleague of mine from Ontario that this young player from Nova Scotia was a player we should look after, and I found out his name, and I said, Crosby. Well, I know a Troy Crosby, who I played against in the Quebec Junior League, and a gentleman told me, he said, well, that's his dad. I said, really? Okay, well, I know his dad a little bit, and that's the first time I heard about Sidney, the phenom.
Pat decided to check out this kid for himself.
We were actually in Toronto about 3 months after I found out about him. It was right in the spring. In the first game that I saw him play, I do remember like it's yesterday. His team won 4-2, and he had a goal and two assists. He was as small as the shortest because he was also the youngest. And his jersey was going down to his almost to his knees because he was smaller. I do remember. But he was always with the puck was, and he was always making plays. He was so special. But where I was most impressed with him is that first day when I met him right there after that game. Sidney came up, and he was extremely mature. Not physically. I mean, he was big. He had good size. But his questions and the way he was talking, and you could tell right away that he had that thing, that special thing. I was extremely impressed with his demeanor and his focus and how he was able to hold a conversation at age 13.
Meeting super agents Pat Brisson and his colleague Dee Rizzo, a former college hockey player at Michigan State, opened up new worlds for Sid.
I think looking back, the big thing for me and talking to my parents about it was, you know, they just felt like the quicker we made that decision, the quicker you wouldn't have the pressure of having to deal with that. You know, it's not necessarily just the younger you are getting an agent, the better. It's more to do with the quality and still realizing, hey, you know, you're 13, you just got to be a kid, you got to play hockey. And there's still that demand, but there were some things that it helped me with, but at the same time, it was more just to be able to have that done and be able to move on.
You know, so Sidney would fly out to L.A. in the summer, and I go with him a couple of times, and he skate with other clients that Pat had, some older ones too. And Pat would introduce him to some NHL guys that were out there, so he would meet NHL players and maybe talk to them and just be able to see how they trained and how they conduct themselves too. It was a big part of it at a young age to see how to be a professional.
When I first went out there, I was bringing cards with me. I was getting guys to sign stuff, and I was a fan. And I think, you know, when I went out there a couple times and I met them, then
I wanted to ask them questions. It wasn't just cool to be around them. Now I wanted to learn from them.
Once pro talent had a chance to see the kids' skills in person, that's when the comparisons really started. Well, one uber comparison specifically. The next one, they were calling him, as in the next Wayne Gretzky. Turns out the great one himself may have been the instigator. He popped into the LA camp one day and saw Sid play. Paul Mason again.
I remember Gretzky saying at one point, and I think Sid might have been about 14 at the time, I'm not really not sure, but Gretzky himself said, this kid may break my records. Like, I mean, that was, Sid was quite young at that time. When he says that, a lot of people listen.
I remember right around that time when I saw him in Toronto, that's when people start saying, well, he dominated in the Maritimes, but he's dominating here as well. So the comparisons were to the best and the greats. You know, is he going to be the next Lindros, the next Lemieux, the next this, the next that? And like all the phenoms kind of comparisons that you're getting when players are dominating, I mean, Sidney used to go to tournament and in 5-6 games, he used to average about 4 or 5 points a game. And when really good players were averaging a point, point and a half.
You can imagine, it was all a little surreal for Sidney.
I think the Gretzky comparison, the Lindros comparison, I mean, those are not names you just throw around. You know what I mean? Like, that's a little bit different than just being a good player in a small town. Those are some pretty big names to be thrown around. And me as a kid watching Wayne Gretzky and watching Eric Lindros and just having them up on a pedestal, like, I'm playing Bantam hockey. How am I being compared and, you know, that kind of thing. So I think you just figure out it just comes with it. It's part of it. And you just have to deal with it.
Sid got to meet a lot of his NHL idols at that training camp in LA.
I was really excited to go to those skates because, you know, as a kid, I wanted to be around the highest level of guys possible. And I remember going out to those skates and the way that I was treated too, I was by far